orphan. Celebrate wedding anniversary. The world of heterosexual is a sick and boring life.
Just looking at her is pure ecstasy. Just touching her is a lifelong fantasy come true. Just being in love with her plunges him into a wondrous world of rapture and enchantment. Just one problem stands in his way. A little secret she's trying to keep all to herself.
There is a mermaid in New York City.
How come she's got legs?
She has legs out of the water. She has fins in the water.
What about a woman showing up naked in a public place, Freddy?
Well, I'm for it, of course.
Can I come in?
No!
All right, let me in.
I'll be right there. I'm just changing.
That girl is a mermaid.
All my life, I've been waiting for someone. And when I find her, she's a fish. Nobody's head loves perfect. She's really hungry.
Daryl Hannah, Tom Hanks, and John Candy. Splash, a fantastic tale about a fantastic tale.
Come on in, the water's fine.
Welcome back to the show, everyone.
Welcome back.
Listeners.
Oh my God, listeners. We are here today talking about Barbie, the Pearl Princess.
That's an underwater fantasy.
It's an underwater fantasy. Just kidding.
The water's perfect. Goodness. Well, I mean, this song is amazing, so I can talk about this all night.
Fitting to the movie that we're discussing.
I'm glad that we found it. Listeners, my name's Pete.
And I'm Scott.
And these are the movies that made us gay.
Just kidding. We are not doing Barbie the Pearl Princess. We got to our Splash episode.
Hey.
This one has been requested from listeners, too.
It has. People have asked for us to cover Splash. I'm glad that we finally got to it. Like I said, I'm glad that we picked the song. No, this is not Kesha that you're listening to.
I mean, what
is
a bop.
Barbie and the Rockers? I don't even
what
know.
What a bop. I mean, put this on at, like, the club.
No, this is a legit pop song.
We're gonna start to listen to this when we go out.
It sounds like my friend Kesha wrote this.
I just put in iTunes Mermaid. I was curious what was going to come up because I wanted to do a mermaid theme song, and this was one of the first ones that came up.
Okay, I mean it's good that we use this song at the top of the show. There is what I think they intended to be a theme song for this movie.
It sucks,
but it's not great.
Yeah,
it sounds like a rejected Poseidon Adventure. Like
it's very there has to be. There has to be a day after, right? There has to be a morning after.
A morning after, yeah.
And it's like, it's not Carly Simon. Kind of in my brain, I remember it being Carly Simon who sings the theme to Splash.
I don't even remember there was a theme to Splash. And I know this movie inside.
Well, I know that there was a theme to Splash because my grandma had a piano book of Disney music and that song was in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Rosalind, I keep wanting to say it's Roseanne Cash. It is not. It doesn't really matter who sings the song. We can look it up in the Wikipedias later on. We're here to talk about the movie Splash.
We're here to talk about Splash.
And the Mermaid Party.
And the Mermaid Party, yep. The Barbie movies do have kind of a big cult following on Letterboxd, I did notice.
The CGI Barbie
the
movies?
The CGI Barbie movies. Okay. All of the Letterboxd reviews are always really funny for all of those. So,
well,
listeners, if you're on Letterboxd, check out any of the Barbie straight to video or VOD movies.
I mean, maybe we'll be watching.
They're pretty funny.
Barbie Mariposa for a Patreon watch of this commentary.
Yeah.
You never know.
Barbie Nutcracker.
Yeah.
Give
us some stats.
Before we get into the episode, the specifics, do we briefly want to talk about the Oscars? We've never really done, like, just sort of Oscar recap of the show.
Sure. Well, listeners, if you're listening to this live, the Oscars 2024 just aired this
Sunday.
They just
aired on Sunday.
Yes, indeed. We had our annual viewing party at our house because we are card-carrying gay homosexuals.
Last in this apartment, too.
True. We are moving very shortly. But it was a fun show.
I think it was a pretty successful ceremony. I think Jimmy did a fine job. You told me later today, if you see John Cena in that, like, modesty thong one more time on your Instagram.
It's all over my Instagram, and I do not need to see his gigantic baby Huey ass in my face nonstop. His entire ass is, like, the size of, like a I was going to say a spare tire, but that's not a fair assessment. It's just too big. His ass is gigantic. It's like a horse's behind. He's too thick. And yeah, I'm kind of done.
Like making love to a giant block of ice.
Well, not only that, it's just that the stupid thong thing that they have him in is just not flattering for anyone's body shape. I don't want to see it. Yeah. It was fine during the show. It's in every Instagram account I follow. Reposted it.
Mm-hmm.
Not the paparazzi, but like the behind the scenes picture of like from the side and the back. Right,
he's awkwardly
done.
Talking to some like show producers.
We're done. Yeah. Yeah. So John Cena was there. Fake nude. I think the big moment that everybody was waiting for, who was going to win Best Actress.
I called it. I always kind of had a gut feeling that Emma, I transported myself out of my body and I was watching the episode on the couch from me in the past.
Well, I think that was.
And I could see into the future.
Sure.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I mean, you did have quite a few bottles of wine.
I did have quite a few drinks, but even before that, I foresaw Emma's name being called off that envelope.
Yeah, I mean,
it was a close race.
I don't know how close we. It was a secret ballot.
I would imagine that Emma won by a very slim margin.
Oh well, we'll never know. I don't know. I feel like it's the two of us have conflicted feelings about Poor Things. And
I think it's fine.
While it was a fine performance, the movie itself, fine.
Yeah. I appreciate the amount of work that it takes to create a character like that kind of from the ground up.
Right. But I mean, I feel like people went into this movie or came out of this movie just espousing like that it was just the funniest movie they'd ever seen. And just, I was just like, I chuckled.
I'm curious to see.
I chuckled a few times. I think it was very easy for people to go in and just be like, I get this. I get these jokes. I love this movie. Whereas, I don't know. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was well done. I thought Emma did a great job. I do think it's a little overrated.
I'm curious to see in the next few years what kind of the legacy of a movie like Poor Things is going to be. If people are going to be talking about it a lot more, because it strikes me as kind of the type of movie that I could see the critical opinion of it maybe making a 180.
Maybe the sheen might wear off. I mean, yeah. The same similar thing happened with her first Oscar win for La La Land.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that there are people out there that are apologists for La La Land. But
it was a very
listeners, buckle up, because the two of us can't stand that goddamn movie.
It was a very zeitgeisty win.
Do not come into this house and request to watch La La Land, because you will be put out on the street, because that movie is hot garbage. Sorry about it.
But other than that, I think it was a fun ceremony.
Yeah.
Jimmy did a good job. I really like the I'm Just Ken number. That was kind of a little
that
nod
was really
to,
great.
That was a nod to Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Well,
that was
a
really
bit
fun.
Of it that was a nod to that. Mm-hmm. But I think the entire number was a lot of fun. Ryan singing that song live, not pre-taped. You could tell that he was actually singing it there. And he did a great job. His voice sounded awesome. He was performing. He was doing dance moves. He was doing a lot of physical stuff. And it was his actual performance of the song was amazing. I was like, damn, Ryan, I forgot. Like, you are a singer. Like, mm-hmm. This is a really good performance of this song. I'm glad that our little Billie Eilish won.
Yeah.
That was cute.
We were a little conflicted about the look, but the hair and makeup on her looked beautiful, and it almost made the whole entire ensemble.
I like the whole look. I think that you and
Justin were a little bit more conflicted about the look than me.
I was definitely conflicted about both Florence Pugh and Emily Blunt's dress. Is that going to be a new thing? Is like the fit of those shoulders?
I hope not. The floating shoulders.
Mm-hmm, the floating shoulders.
I think the two of them look like they were just about to be strapped into a thrill ride, mm-hmm. a roller coaster, if you will.
It was giving us Rumor Willis and the House Bunny.
It was giving scoliosis. Back brace. I guess it was cute. Wasn't a fan for either one. I don't think it was successful in either one of them.
Kind of the big surprises of the night was American Fiction's win in adapted screenplay.
Right, right.
And I didn't think that they would go for the Zone of Interest in sound.
Oh.
I just thought that voters would be lazy and just vote for the loudest movie.
Okay.
Which is what usually happens in sound.
Fair, fair. Didn't see Zone of Interest, but I think that was one of the talking points that everybody always has about that movie is the sound design.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was a big part of that. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun show. It's Hollywood's biggest night.
Mm-hmm. Hollywood's biggest night.
where Hollywood's brightest stars come out to shine that night. Yeah, it was a lot of fun though. We enjoyed it.
All right, let's talk about today's movie.
Okay,
Splash. Released March 9th, 1984, starring Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah, John Candy, and Eugene Levy. Written by Lowell Ganz, Babalu Mandel, and Bruce J. Friedman, based on the story by Brian Glazer. Splash just turned 40 this week.
Sure, Splash did turn 40 this week. I feel like Brian Glazer, husband of Gigi LaVangie-Grainger, ex-husband of Gigi LaVangie-Grainger, I feel like Brian Glazer's story credit is like him driving in a car. Like,
well, isn't that
on a 1980s like cell phone with Ron Howard on the other end and Brian Grazer's like chewing gum and he's just like, guy falls in love with a mermaid. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's more or less
the story credit.
I think it's more or less the story behind how we came up with the idea. Was he was driving down PCH and just thought, we should just make a movie about a mermaid. So
boom,
originally, the story that was being shopped to studios was mermaid comes to land and she's trying to adjust to life in Manhattan. And then I think that when they were kind of reworking the story, when they were pitching it, it turned into a love story. Probably just like an easier script to write, too.
Well, I think what works about this movie is Madison's character is so mysterious. And I think that really works with Daryl Hannah as a acting choice, and just her as a person, as the star. It just all comes together so well. In there's so much left unsaid in this script, and I think that really lends itself to why this movie works so well. But the casting is just so like so perfect, so spot on.
We should probably mention this is the first film released by Touchstone Pictures, a label created by the Walt Disney Studios that. The same year that this movie was made, they wanted to target more adult audiences with, I mean, I hate to say mature content, but that seems dirty. But they wanted to essentially aim more movies for adults that were made by Disney. So they created Touchstone.
Right, right, right. And I mean, this is, you know, you think of Disney and you think of Disney live action movies and what, you know, what we know of as Disney live action movies today and how they wanted to kind of say, okay, well, Touchstone will be a little bit more, like you said, mature adult, but not, you know, not like adult themes and mature situations, but just a little different than the Disney banner. But what we don't think about, and I watched the DVD special features on this today, which we don't own the DVD, but the special features are on YouTube. So watch those today. And Tom Hanks is talking about it. Like, so I go down to Disney and it's like the old West Town at Universal Studios. Like, it was like an old, like, it was empty. Nobody was there. Like, it was Disney in 1983.
Sure.
Weird, like what live action
a
Disney
weird
movies.
Transitional time for the studio.
Yeah. They're like, okay, well, maybe this isn't going to be exactly the Cat from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going to kind of make some better quality movies here. And this is pre Little Mermaid, right?
Yes.
This is pre, like, and not just Little Mermaid in like a mermaid movie. I mean, in Disney being a viable movie studio.
Yeah.
Like at that time, he was like, it just was run down. Nobody was there. I go to this building that like hadn't been painted in years. And I walk in and the building's empty, and I go down this long hallway, and there's Brian Grazer's office, like at the end of the hall, with nobody in this building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Disney in the early 80s for live action movies was not, they weren't pumping out like 101 Dalmatians with Glenn Close.
Mm-mm.
You know, they were making like Herbie movies, right?
I mean, so, not even that. I think that the Disney live action movies had kind of,
that's what I'm saying,
had since kind of 70s. Tanked out since the mid 70s.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when they were making them, they were these like hokey kind of, you know, Gladys the Groovy Mule with like with Don Knotts, right? Mm-hmm. So I think,
which I love all of those movies too.
Yeah.
I grew up watching all of them on the Disney
Channel.
We
love The Computer Wears Tennis Shoes, you know, Apple Dumpling Gang,
Pete's Dragon,
the Cat from Outer Space. Love all those movies, but they're just a very specific kind of family fantasy movie. And this is a family fantasy movie, and this movie is like aimed at families. It won some like award for family movies. It's a lot of boning in this movie.
Oh yeah,
this
we'll talk about
is horny.
We'll talk about this wild script.
This movie is horny the entire movie. Tom Hanks completely naked, holding his balls for like minutes on the screen. Like, yeah.
There's like Letters to Penthouse references in this screenplay.
Yeah, this movie had Lil Pete feeling some kind of way in the movie theater, and I will tell you that I have a vivid memory of seeing this in the movie theater at the Santa Anita Mall at the Westfield Arcadia.
Oh, wow.
Yes,
get out of here.
Yeah, the same movie theater that I saw Ghost at.
Which we mentioned on our Ghost episode, I think, that the Santa Anita Mall movie theater at the time was in the Old Navy.
Yeah, it's in the Zara.
The Zara.
Yeah.
Sure.
The Zara now.
That makes sense because the Zara is a big storefront.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, back in the day, before it was like the grand AMC that
I
is
like
now.
That. Santa Anita Mall Cinema.
Mm-hmm. I saw quite a few movies there back in the day, but I remember seeing it. I remember looking up at the little marquee before you go into the theater where it's written there, and I remember the walls, and I remember being very tiny and looking up and seeing all the adults around me being very big because I was probably 4 or 5. But yeah, I saw this in the theater. I
did Little Pete love it?
You know, my sister was a very big fan of Bosom Buddies. So I was
it was a big break for Tom Hanks.
So to me, this is not like, who's this new guy on the scene? To me, I'm like, oh duh, it's Bosom Buddies. Like, hello. It's Buffy. Because he was Buffy on it. Bosom Buddies. And Peter Scolari was Hildy. Buffy and Hildy. Hildy, short for Hildegard.
Peter Scolari, like, serving body.
Peter Scolari
on
was
serving
on the body beautiful on Bosom Buddies. You watch those opening scenes where he's shirtless. Damn.
He pretty fit.
Yes. And, you know, I just, as a little kid, as a 5-year-old kid, I just felt like Tom Hanks to me just, he has that quality. You just love Tom Hanks, right?
Just seems like such a fun guy.
He just seems like a fun guy. He's funny, which to me as a kid, I just immediately latched on to.
This is the same year that he was in Bachelor Party, too.
Absolutely.
Which is wild. I mean, movies that made his gay favorite, Bachelor Party.
Super cute in Bachelor Party. He's just charming, affable, all these things you just love about him. So I immediately was like, great. John Candy, I feel like I obviously know him from Spaceballs, but that's a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just somebody from the 80s that was just kind of ubiquitous. So
comedy
obviously
staple.
Obviously, you love John Candy, right? So yeah, as a kid, my sister and I just loved this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just loved it.
So I remember watching this a handful of times. I want to say that the Disney Channel probably programmed it, but I have a memory of watching this film on Laserdisc in my grandparents' basement.
Work.
So I think of it as
why do
laser.
We not have the Laserdisc?
We do not have the Laserdisc. I think that it was something that
got lost in the fire.
My grandma's brother, who all of the Laserdiscs were his,
right.
It was his, and we just borrowed it.
Got it. Okay.
For like the weekend.
Got it.
And I don't remember a lot of it, but I always remember that shot of John Candy with the cigar sitting on the tank.
In the tank, right.
And
right.
Even when I'm a kid, I love John Candy. I definitely grew up on him. But even at that young age, I was like, I can't with this character. I can't
He's
with
too
this
much.
Gross man.
You knew that he was like, yeah, sleazy. Yeah,
I
before
know.
You had a reference for what
yep,
sleazy
before
was.
Before I knew
it was him.
When just a reference of men crossing the line and
right.
just being gross,
right.
I was like, I can't with this character.
Right, right. And I love them as brothers. They're just good playing off each
casting.
Other.
Sure.
Interesting casting. They don't look alike.
I almost think that I read that Tom Hanks was brought in thinking he was reading for the brother.
He probably did.
And then Ron Howard was like, I think you should just be the lead.
I mean, you want to talk about casting. This is one of those movies where you look at the casting and it's like
everybody.
Everybody passed and everybody was there reading for it at some point or was offered. And, you know, and we ended up with our cast who we have now. But I mean, for the character of Alan Bauer, our Tom Hanks character, I mean, you know, what can you say? Tom Hanks, he's the everyman. He's our new Jimmy Stewart. But he really embodied that in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like...
He was young. He was cute, too.
Right, right. And I think they were going for... I think they were going for Chevy Chase, Michael Keaton.
Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore is always somebody in this orbit of these handsome, tall, leading men. And Dudley Moore's always thrown in there. Mm-hmm. And he's a short, funny-looking British guy.
I mean, I could see a version of this movie...
I could absolutely see
being produced with kind of a funny looking guy that falls in love with a hot mermaid.
Yeah.
Very. I mean, I think it was very close to Bill Murray doing this movie too.
Okay. And then there's talk of Bill Murray saying that he wanted to focus on more dramatic roles, which is fair.
So, I mean, did Ghostbusters come out in 84?
84.
I almost wonder if it was one of those things that I have to do Ghostbusters or Splash. And I'm going to choose.
Sure,
I'm going to choose Ghostbusters.
Right. John Travolta saying that his agent told him to pass. Jeff Bridges, Richard Gere, Kevin Kline, Burt Reynolds, Robin Williams, John Hurt, Christopher Reeve, and Robert Klein.
Interesting.
Are all in consideration.
I also read that Steve Guttenberg auditioned for the role and did not get it. I could absolutely see 80s Steve Guttenberg as Alan.
And Ron Howard brings him in a couple of years later for Cocoon.
That's probably where he first met him.
And,
yeah.
All right. Is Steve Guttenberg the RC Cola Tom Hanks? Maybe.
I mean, not at that moment, though.
Right.
It would have been pretty on even playing field,
right?
I
but say. I mean, in the long run, is that kind of his place in Hollywood? Is he our discount Tom Hanks? Maybe, but I think he could have carried Splash. I think Steve Guttenberg is definitely good enough. He was at this point, the first Police Academy is already out. He had done the Village People movie, so he's getting up there. He has more movies under his belt than Tom Hanks.
I was gonna say Tom Hanks had just had
Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies, and he had a recurring role on Family Ties.
Right. Two episodes,
yeah.
And yeah, I guess he had done a guest spot on Happy Days, and so...
That's probably like the Ron Howard
people
connection.
People in Ron's orbit were just like, you should look at this guy, and yeah. So, but you know, it's Tom Hanks, it's great.
Were you reading the roles that Ron... Or the movies that... Were you reading the movies that Ron Howard turned down to direct Splash?
Yeah.
So it was Footloose, mm-hmm. And what's the second one?
Gosh, I remember it was Footloose and something else. But two.
Footloose and Mr. Mom.
And Mr. Mom, yeah.
And speaking of Mr. Mom, I'm sure that
Michael
George,
Keaton passed
I'm
on
sure
this.
Michael Keaton's name was thrown in there, yep.
It was, and he passed on this to do Mr. Mom. And, you know, it says that Travolta's agent told him to turn it down. I think people saw the script and were like, a mermaid movie? Mm-hmm. Like, what? What is this?
Yeah. And I was reading that... At the time when they were producing Splash, there was a rival
mermaid movie
that was supposed to star Warren Beatty that was being made over at Warner.
Yeah.
And essentially, Touchstone and Disney just sped up production of, we need to start filming this now.
Right.
And then Warner kind of got cold feet and just pulled the project all together.
I think the Warren Beatty movie just kind of went into turnaround and never came out. And this one kind of beat it. But I mean, this is the lower budget movie, you know, doesn't have big stars attached to it. But I don't know. There's just something about this script and Ron Howard's direction that just kind of like made it work.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about who else was considered for Madison?
Oh, I'm not really sure. I don't have it in my notes who was considered as Madison.
Well,
do you?
I don't have it, but it's in the trivia. Let me pull that up because it's... It's quite an extensive list. I think that Brooke Shields was offered.
I could see a young Brooke Shields in this movie.
I think that if it wasn't Daryl Hannah, maybe Brooke Shields might have been the only person that could have done a comparable job.
I think
it would have been a different character.
I think that Brooke would have played the whole, excuse my pun, the fish out of water comedy really well.
Right. Right. And I also really like the idea of the mermaid being a raven beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because Brooke doesn't have black hair. Brooke has brown hair. But I like
Brooke
that.
Wouldn't work as a blonde, so no, she would have to be brown.
It would have had to be brunette. Have to be brunette. But I like her hair color and just her look. I just think, you know, just think Blue Lagoon and slap a tail on her.
And that's probably why there you go. I mean, she was going to college at the time, so right. She was trying to get an education. But
so Brooke Shields turned it down because she was going to Princeton.
Going to Princeton, yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, you always hear Jodie Foster for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So she auditioned. But she took a part in the Hotel New Hampshire.
Oh, I don't know about the Hotel New Hampshire. Not familiar.
With that. Rosanna Arquette.
I could see an 80s Rosanna Arquette mm-hmm. as Madison.
Okay, so here's where it gets cuckoo bananas. And according to IMDb trivia, these are all the actors that turned down Madison: Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Melanie Griffith, Jeannie Francis from Days of Our Lives, married to Commander Riker. Fiona Fullerton, not familiar with her, Diane Lane, Tatum O'Neill, Michelle Pfeiffer, Sharon Stone, and Kathleen Turner.
So pretty much everyone.
Right. Deborah Winger reportedly wanted the role, but Ron Howard turned her down. Difficult.
Deborah Winger wouldn't have worked. No.
And here's where it starts getting, like, outer space.
Wild.
Beam me up, Uhura.
Oh, so we're just bringing in everybody.
Lisa Welchel.
We were talking about, is there just a tape somewhere in a filing cabinet over at Disney of Lisa Welchel's Splash audition?
Right. And the age ranges are wild because at this point, Lisa Welchel and, you know, Jody are teenagers.
And then Kathleen Turner, if you're going to offer to Kathleen Turner. Oh, so he's meeting like a woman under the sea.
Right.
Like
right.
A woman.
That's what I'm saying. You know, Brooke also would have been 19. Maybe 20. But yeah, then you get Jeannie Francis and Kathleen Turner, even Stoney, and then Tanya Roberts, who went on to do Sheena the same year. Tanya Roberts was probably pushing 30 as well. Mm-hmm. These are women under the
sea. I mean, what do you think Tom Hanks was in this movie, 25?
He was 28.
So I think that he was 28. Oh, okay, 28. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess depends on how... I think that he could have worked with someone that was around 20.
Right.
Maybe.
And lastly, Shelley Long, Ally Sheedy, and Molly Ringwald, other teenagers, and finally, PJ Souls.
PJ Souls.
Fresh off Rock and Roll High School.
I want to see an 80s PJ Soul.
That hair.
Souls.
That hair. Just as that medicine. Like, thick-ass blonde hair. I love it.
But here's the thing, is that like you can throw out all of these names, but... would any of them been able to look as beautiful underwater right. as one Miss Daryl Hannah? Because when you watch this movie and you see those underwater scenes, you're like...
She was born to do drag.
Oh my God. She was born to do drag.
She is taking
a fish to water.
Yes.
Like, she's beautiful.
So, like,
That's a fucking mermaid right there.
So, what do we know about Daryl Hannah? We know she had just done Blade Runner, so she can play this otherworldly character... really well, right? She played Pris in Blade Runner, replicant, robot, kind of fish out of water.
I always love the story with Daryl Hannah that she talks about when being brought in to read for that character. And mm-hmm. she says that when she walked into the audition room, everybody was kind of playing like robot, like with
right.
the arms.
Right. And they were dressed a little like Gem in the Holograms, mm-hmm. like glitter stars on their face and stuff.
But she kind of came in... fully punk rock.
Right.
To the audition.
Yeah. She came in like grungy, street punk, kind of futuristic, which is like...
I love that.
Oh my God. So cool.
Such an iconic character.
We also know her from the Steel Magnolias press tour, where she's just a little kind of little cuckoo.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's also supposed to be very shy,
right,
too.
Right.
I think there's that really famous appearance with all of them on Phil Donahue, and she's not on it.
Right.
So she's not on the panel when they're on Donahue because she was just too camera shy.
Right. But then doesn't Julia, like, drag her out on Letterman?
I want to say that, yeah, that Julia went on Letterman, and it was one of those things that they originally booked Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
And Daryl Hannah's like,
I don't want to do it.
I don't want to do it. And then Julie was like, well,
I'm in town. I'll go.
But, I'll go with you.
But we'll do it together.
We'll do it together.
Yeah, I think so too. But yeah, I feel like Daryl is just a kind of a little, you know, actressy kind of actress person, a little bit eccentric maybe. But the thing is, when in all of her interviews, she talks about loving the Hans Christian Andersen Little Mermaid since she was a kid and teaching herself how to swim like a mermaid.
Yeah.
Her whole life. Right.
Which didn't we all do as kids too?
We had the luxury of having
movies like Splash
and the real Little Mermaid to watch and to emulate. She's doing this on her own, thinking, okay, this is how mermaids swim, right? And like you said, that you know they put her in the water, and you watch these scenes, and it's like, how are they doing this? She just seems so natural acting. Okay, just imagine what it must feel like, your entire lower half of your body bound up in that tail.
Yeah,
right.
Those heavy.
That has to be, like, so jarring to be thrown in the water.
And this is like
the way I want to move, kicking my legs.
This was like pre the Mertailer.
Oh my God.
On Instagram that can do custom mermaid tails. So the prop people. And the people doing I mean, I'm assuming that it's like sort of a prosthetic.
Right. It
too,
is. Yeah.
That it was probably heavy.
So it was a new kind of prosthetic that has gone on to be something that they use in the business now. I think it was like a silicone base that they use now on everything. But at the time they were not using because foam latex, air quotes, what they used back then for these costumes is very porous and will just sort of sponges, right? So they can't have that. She'll sink right to the bottom. So they make this tail out of this new material. And the tail maker is Robert Short. And this tail is everything. It looks like a fish.
It looks like a fish. The tail was fully functional, and Daryl got so good at using the tail to swim that according to the crew, who were the safety team, they could not keep up with her.
Sure.
Because they had to probably have somebody follow her underwater.
With the regulator. As soon as they cut, they jammed the regulator in her mouth so she could
breathe. That she was so fast that they couldn't keep up with her.
So she tells a story in the making of that Ron is bringing in stunt swimmers to do scenes, wide shots, so she wouldn't have to be in them.
Were none of them as good as her?
Yeah. She said she was like, I want to watch. I want to watch these stunt swimmers audition. And they're all watching them. And they're all just like, Daryl's faster and stronger than all of them.
We just have to use her on camera?
Yeah. So just use her. So, and they did. And that's why she's in every shot. That's why you're like, oh, okay. That's why it sells it so much, because it's her in everything. I mean, you talked a little bit about the Mertailer. And we talked about growing up with the Little Mermaid. I mean, we just have to talk about our relationship with mermaids.
Sure, absolutely. I feel like all gay boys and girls and little girls all can agree on their love for mermaids. I was definitely the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, straight boys too. I know tons of straight boys who jump in the pool and do the Little Mermaid hair flip. Everybody does it. Mm-hmm. Everybody does the Little Mermaid hair flip out the pool. You just have to, you know?
I mean, Pete and I are both grown-ass men that both have mermaid tattoos.
Yes, indeed.
And I specifically have a merman tattoo that he is sitting on anchor. He looks like Bert.
He looks like Bert Reynolds.
Bert Reynolds. And he is attached to a sailor that is tied up in a rope.
Right. Who's down by a buried treasure in the bottom of the ocean. Mine is the Loteria card, La Sirena, and it's pretty much just a replica of the original card. Titties out, listeners. Mm-hmm. No seashell bra on mine, because the original Loteria card that your family played, that you put a little bean on it, or pennies, depending on your family. If you got the legit one, you got titties out mermaid. So that's what I have. She's my second tattoo. Third tattoo ever. And she needs to be touched up. She's old. But I feel like anytime I was ever in a pool at the very deep end, I would always just try to like swim as deep as I could so you could get that good mermaid like swim going.
So you could act like Madison.
You know? Yeah. And or Ariel, you know, what have you. Mm-hmm. I feel like I always really loved the way long hair looks underwater.
Especially a Barbie's hair. Oh, my God. Barbie, mermaid Barbies.
Yes. Let's talk about mermaid Barbies.
I mean, I grew up with dolls. I loved playing with Barbies. Yeah. And the Barbie mermaid was like, she was the one. She was the one she that the I woman. Loved playing with in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you would put her hair underwater.
Of course.
Yeah, you got to. You got to. So my sister was very big into My Little Ponies, as were you.
Yep.
And there were mermaids. There were like seahorses.
I remember the commercials there with were seahorse, there My Little Ponies, seahorses. But I did not have any, though.
Yeah, and my sister got a couple of those, and they also had their manes would look good under the water. I think just something about like that kind of tropical under-the-sea vibe was just like with kids' toys and stuff.
So much fun.
Yeah, so much fun. And just the idea of like, you know, when you really think about it, like, I don't know, man. The ocean's deep. Like, where are they living? Well, if you get down into the weeds of like what is going on with the mermaids, fish just be living in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Like, do they have a house? What's going on? Not as glamorous when you do a deep dive, but just on the surface level of being able to swim as fast as you want in the entire ocean.
I remember.
They're so beautiful.
I was thinking today that I would be on boats a lot as a kid, mm-hmm. either fishing with my dad or in Alaska when we would go out in the ocean and go like deep sea fishing and just kind of hanging out by the shore and stuff. And I always used to be on the lookout for mermaids.
Right.
It was one of those things that, like, I believe.
Right.
I believe that they're out there somewhere.
I did a TikTok deep dive today about real-life sirens and their existence.
That one that you showed me, that video is wild.
There's some spooky, ooky,
We're going to post that one on our
spooky,
Instagram.
Spooky, ooky, kooky TikToks out there. It's the guy in the boat.
I hear him. Where's he at? What the fuck is that noise, bro? What is that noise? Where are you? This is crazy. I heard it. I heard it. I hear it.
And, like, they see the, like, these, like, creatures, like, chasing the boat. They look like they could be dolphins. But then, like, the boat, like, slows down. And
then
you
kind of start to hear them.
You start hearing the siren song?
Hear them, the siren song. I mean, I remember being a kid and finding out that mermaids in history were more malicious, that they would drown men.
Right.
They would drown sailors.
Right. And see, this is where the whole like siren versus mermaid conversation comes in, which is like,
what's the difference between a siren and a mermaid?
The sirens are just malicious. The sirens are, we are going to lure you to your death by like jumping off of your ship or like crashing your ship into the rocks with our siren song. And I think mermaids are just, a mermaid is a little bit more benign. Just like, I live underwater and have like a tail instead of legs. And I'm just beautiful.
The fairy tale theater, Little Mermaid.
So with good. Pam Dauber.
With Pam Dauber from Mork
Mindy
and Mindy.
From Mork and Mindy. Yes, indeed.
I remember when the Disney movie came out last year, we went back and watched that one on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And how they do the underwater scenes in that one is wild because they use a giant fan.
Right. Which can work. Listeners, go look up the Sade video for Ordinary Love. They use the fans to blow everything around, her hair and just like under the sea things. But they did that thing where they filmed it at normal speed, but the camera was rolling really, really, really fast. So then when they play it back normally, it's slow motion. Mm-hmm. So you can do a dry for wet and make it work. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many of these kind of depictions that we as kids just kind of fell in love with, of just like what it would be like to live under the ocean. Under the sea.
When we covered the Spielberg Hook on our podcast, I talk about on that movie of some of my favorite movie mermaids ever are from Hook.
Okay. So here's something else I want to get into. This, I feel like nowadays there's this idea of like mermaid slash unicorn and it's this rainbow aesthetic, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a unicorn bagel or a mermaid bagel or a unicorn, like, frappe or whatever. And it's these crazy Lisa Frank rainbow colors, right? And Hook had probably a lot to do with that. And the mermaids in that movie each had a color, and there were these really bright colors, which I love. But I love the idea of Madison in this movie really just looking like a fish.
Yeah.
She looks like a koi fish. Her tail is like a koi fish. She's a big goldfish. And then she has blonde hair. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about mermaid hair color and, like, Madison and being blonde and all that? Ariel being a redhead, like,
well,
I think it works for everything.
I think it works depending on the actress.
Right.
I think that when you get somebody like Daryl as your mermaid, you're going to go for that sort of beach waif blonde.
Right.
You're going to go for that, like, hippie blonde hair color from the 80s.
And as we see on The Wrong Person, it may not work, right? Because, listeners, I'm here to tell you, there is a sequel to Splash.
You know what's funny is when we were watching the movie, and when it kind of got towards the ending of it, I was thinking, I could not remember if there was a Splash sequel, and I was just thinking, like, I wonder if these actors were offered a sequel, and they just didn't take it.
Right. Well, I don't know if it was Disney Channel, but it's definitely made for TV.
It would make sense if it was Disney Channel.
Yeah. And it's the same characters, but none of the actors came back, so they got Amy Yazbeck of Robin Hood Men in Tights, the widow of John Ritter,
mm-hmm.
the beautiful Amy Yazbeck.
Yeah.
Stunning. Gorgina, right? That woman is a redhead. That woman needs to be a redhead. And in this crimped to within an inch of its life Madison wig in Splash 2, T-O-O.
Oh, my God. I just don't even like reading that title, too.
Splash, as well.
It just hurts my eyeballs.
Splash also. Yeah, that hair color just doesn't work on her. And like I said, Amy Yazbeck, fine actress, a lovely woman. She's doing great things with the John Ritter Foundation to this day about this aortic dissection disease that took John Ritter before his time. But she has no business in that blonde
wig. She just doesn't really work as Madison.
Yeah. And so somebody like Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who was like in that list, like, girl,
no.
What? Girl, mm-hmm. What? She has black hair. She doesn't have, like, brown, auburn. I think there's just something about Brooke or Daryl or just a handful of these girls. There's something about this, like, ethereal, otherworldly quality that they have that's hard to come by. And I know it's just looks and it's superficial and all that, but I think the two of them have the chops to pay it off.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, and also with somebody like Daryl that you probably could have used a stand-in for a majority all of these shots. But I mean,
it's her. And it's we know it's her.
And she fucking sells it.
Yeah. No body double here.
No body double.
Julia.
Those scenes of her with, like, the shipwreck,
mm-hmm.
I think they're so magical to watch.
That is giving,
they're incredible.
That is giving Little Mermaid house down boots, mama. Like, that is crazy. 3 years before The Little Mermaid comes out,
I mean, probably
we're seeing this.
The success of a movie like this, because I think it was a pretty decent hit in 84 when it came out.
Huge.
That it probably led to Disney looking into other options of going back into the original ideas that Walt had to do the Hans Christian Andersen story as an animated feature.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, there's just something about how perfect the casting was because she had that, like, just love for this mermaid character and the ability, the physicality to do the underwater stuff. And then on top of that, she looks great doing all of it. So it's like, it kind of is one of those things where it's like, it had to be Daryl, and her and Tom Hanks's chemistry is so good in this movie. Like, they're just so good playing off of each other. Okay, so we have to kind of break down their characters before we get any further. So
Tom Hanks plays Alan Bauer.
Yes.
That Alan Bauer, man, like, he has a produce business, which I think is interesting.
Right. It's a fruit and vegetable produce, like, reseller situation. And they're in that part of New York that you see. It was in Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Do you remember? You know what I'm talking about? It's in lots of movies. It's just this like old like part of
you get those little cobblestone streets.
Yeah, forgive me, New Yorkers. We're not, you know, we're not from there, but we know that this is an older part of the city where a lot, you know, a lot of this grocery, you know, business takes place. And I'm assuming that because Alan runs Bauer Produce with his brother Freddie, played by John Candy.
John Candy's introduction of this movie is unhinged.
Wild.
Wild. So I remember the Disney Plus controversy of this movie, of when it was added that they did the hair extensions to Madison's, like...
Her butt.
Her butt, to, yeah, like, cover up her, mm-hmm, her little... Her little butt.
And it looked awful. It looked awful. It looked like Homer Simpson wearing the welcome mat.
Mm-hmm.
I have misplaced my pants.
But I remember when we watched it right when Disney Plus came out that I was just like, oh, so you can cover up Daryl Hannah's, like, beautiful behind, which is very, like, tastefully shot, I should say. Like
the original, yeah. But well done.
The Freddie Bauer character's first line of this movie is where he's talking
they
about...
They ran my letter.
They ran my letter.
They ran my letter.
In the penthouse forum.
Yes.
So did they cut the line?
I don't remember. We didn't go back and watch it
again.
I think they may have cut it. And the line is, the name of his letter.
A lesbian no more.
A lesbian no more. Yes.
And I'm not somebody that like gets too nitpicky for movies of the 80s. I get it's a different time, but I didn't think for this movie that I'm like, all right, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Let's maybe pull back a little bit on this character.
Well, the big gaggerini is that I don't know if this is true or not. I just read this a couple of days ago that because of licensing things and the whole Hulu/Disney+ situation is that in the UK, Poor Things is going directly to Disney+.
Well, I think that everything in the UK and in Europe, I don't think that
Hulu exists.
Like it's all just as one.
Right. So... Poor Things.
You can see Disney+. You can see Poor Things in All of Us Strangers.
Yeah.
Off of Disney+.
Right. Mm-hmm. Listeners.
Wild.
There's a lot of sex in both of those movies. it makes Splash look like The Little Mermaid 2. Ariel's Undersea Adventure.
But yeah, I can't with Freddy's character.
Yeah, he's just your classic sleazebag.
I mean,
which I
even from these 80s. Early scenes of them as children,
right?
Of dropping change on the ground and looking up women's skirt,
right. So this movie starts off in a flashback. It starts off and it says 20 years ago, which to me, 1962 is 20 years ago.
And they're playing Wooly Bully.
They're playing Wooly Bully on a boat that's just kind of one of those, you know, ferries that you take around.
They're out
Cape Cod
at Martha's Vineyard,
mm-hmm. And it's not black and white. It's sepia. It's giving, you know.
It's giving me like
Wizard of Oz.
It's not quite Wizard of Oz. It's giving me 80s diamond commercial. It's giving me like
these have always brought me luck.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But it's not black and white. Right. It's a sepia tone. And you know, there's a little Tom Hanks and there's a little John Candy. And it's 20 years ago and they're little kids. And they're on this boat. And Alan, the Tom Hanks character, just walks to the edge of the boat and just jumps off of this ferry. Mm-hmm. He doesn't fall. He jumps into the water. And when he's down there, he sees a little girl implied to be a mermaid. And she like grabs his hands and they like kind of just frolic under the water a little bit, and until the men jump into the sea,
and he gets pulled
and
out,
pull Alan out, and the little girl is wearing this. Is it Louis Vuitton? What is who's got the Medusa? The Medusa medallion
isn't that Gucci? Versace?
Versace, yeah, she's got the Versace Medusa on her like gold medallion, but the gold medallion and the necklace is a character beat that we see throughout the movie, because later on that's how we know it's the same undersea gal. And you know, they bring him back to the boat, and then we cut to the little girl swimming now above the water, and the little girl's crying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so good. Like, it's really good.
Tears of a mermaid.
These little children actors are so good in this, right? And it's this thing that as we see Alan as an adult, we get this this character beat that he just can't keep a girlfriend, and like his last girlfriend left him because she told him she loves him and he won't say it back. and she's moving out.
And you kind of get this longing with him that this moment as a child has followed him to an adult, because when you go into his very cool 80s apartment, that this would be like goals for me as a kid.
It's goals for us.
Like
now.
I want to live in, like, when I'm an adult, I'm going to be living in Alan's apartment from Splash.
Right.
That there's fish tanks all around his house.
He has a couple of fish tanks in his
office. So it's like he's still kind of yearning for that moment of when he was a little boy.
The sea is calling.
And
to him.
And he met this mermaid.
His life, his love, and his lady.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sea. Just like Mandy. Yeah, so it's this character beat of Alan that he's longing for something else. That, you know, this life by the sea is still there. And there's a wedding. One of his employees at the market is getting married, and Alan is an usher, and so he has to be at the wedding. And the night of the wedding, he gets drunk.
I love that shot of him on the bar.
I'm on the bar.
Which, I mean, that's also just very classic 80s Tom Hanks comedy.
Hanks.
That's
down.
Hanks.
Yeah.
Down.
So good. You know, I was kind of watching this movie and I was kind of like, I think I figured out Tom Hanks' acting style. He just kind of shouts everything. You know, like some of the jokes, like, she left me. You know, everybody's asking about his girlfriend as he's seating the guests to the wedding. Oh, where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? Oh, she's sick. Oh, she's not coming. And then finally somebody says, oh, where is she? And he just screams, she left me. All right. She left me. And it's Clint Howard.
Clint Howard getting yelled at.
Yeah.
In his only scene of Splash.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole Howard family almost is in this movie. Just not the mom.
The dad's in it.
And so, you know, when he ends up drunk after the wedding, he calls a cab from presumably Manhattan.
Yeah.
And asks to be taken to Cape Cod.
How much do you think a cab ride from Manhattan to Cape Cod would cost in the 80s?
Well, Cape Cod is in Massachusetts. The cabbie says 300 miles. Doesn't he?
I think so.
Says that's about 300 miles. Yeah. You got the cash? And then he just pulls out cash.
It's played as a joke in the movie.
Right.
Too.
Right. How far away
it is. Of how far away it is. Yeah, but yeah. Gets in a cab and goes all the way to Martha's Vineyard.
Yes. Yeah. From Manhattan. Mm-hmm. How long? 3 hours? I don't know. Who knows? We discovered that the Charles River, which is also outside of Boston, is a 3 hour ride from Long Island, our Eternal Sunshine episode. Not our Eternal Sunshine episode.
Paul and Erica talked about that on That Aged Well.
There you go.
From Rockville Center, I think that it's around 3 hours.
Yep. So, you know, he just, something's pulling him back there. He goes back and he gets dropped off on the wrong side of the bay, essentially. And he needs to make it across. And this is where we meet Dr. Kornbluth.
Oh, this is where we meet. this is where we meet Eugene Levy,
Dr. Kornbluth.
Eugene Levy. I think that since we are so familiar now with his son Dan, who is very handsome, that when we go back and watch Eugene Levy in films from the 80s, you kind of look at him and you're like, okay, if you were to like give this guy a haircut and trim the eyebrows, he would be handsome.
not just from the 80s, American Pie, everything. It was not until Schitt's Creek. Did Dan come in and say, can you just blow dry this man's hair, please, and give him a little bit of conditioner?
Trim up the eyebrows a little bit.
And in that show, he looks great. He looks amazing. You put a side-by-side of Eugene Levy in Schitt's Creek and a side-by-side of him as Jim's dad from American Pie. He looks 15 years younger. Mm-hmm. And it's like 15 years later, and he looks younger than he does in American Pie. And it's just, what will a good haircut and, like, you know, a glow up, man. It, like, a good haircut on a guy does a lot. And, in the 80s, if they had styled him like that, if they had just, you know, blown out, just take him over to Dry Bar, sit him down, give him a blowout, he would look great. He would look like Dan Levy in this movie, but he doesn't.
Yeah, but I love this character, though.
No, Dr. Kornbluth is amazing. I love this character. I just love that he just fucking hates everybody and cannot catch a break. Like, he's a great character. So funny.
And you kind of get, like, a nice little arc with this character as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. He has that, a really great redemption at the end.
He has a really good redemption at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I love his two, like, idiot helpers, the moron twins. We're not twins. Yeah, the moron twins are so funny. Even as a kid, I was just like, oh, my God, the moron twins. I can't with these two.
So Alan gets knocked overboard in his little boat, knocks his head on the small boat when the other guy's is going to come back with the smaller boat.
The little
the
boat!
Little boat in that Hanksy delivery. And Madison rescues him.
Yes. Yes, she rescues him down there. And okay. All right. And this is one of those things that you're not supposed to care. But we all know about those coral reefs outside of Cape Cod, right?
I was going to say, there is coral reefs in this movie outside of Manhattan.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going for realism in this movie.
The Hudson River Bay. Yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
I mean, I would imagine that there's some type of coral from... in Martha's Vineyard somewhere.
I don't know.
On the bottom of the ocean.
I don't know. But the scenes
really know.
In the morning when he wakes up washed up on the beach, it is the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And it is actually the beach that Disney owns in the Bahamas.
Sure.
It's Castaway Cay.
It's shot
Castaway Key.
On that island that Disney owns.
Right.
I was kind of wondering if it was Florida, but it makes more sense if it's that island in the Bahamas.
It's where they drop you off in the Disney cruise. Donovan, what's it called? Castaway Key. It's the Bahamas. It's not Cape Cod. It's like this beautiful blue sky.
So Alan makes his way back to New York. All right. I want to talk about the backstory with Daryl Hannah. That it's very it's very mysterious.
Sure. Okay. So immediately when he first wakes up, it is... there are some major, like, real modern day Little Mermaid... parallels in this movie, right? A lot of beats really ring true to, if you're just watching it fresh, you're just like, oh, this is like an updated Little Mermaid. That's like all it is, right? He wakes up on the beach and there she is. She saved him. She jumps back in the water and he's just kind of like trying to find this mystery woman who saved
him. And then this mermaid tracks him down.
So
because she finds his wallet.
His wallet falls
I love
out
those
of
shots
his jacket.
Of her. I love those shots of her looking at his wallet.
So she finds his wallet with his Vista card inside and opens it up and, you know, sees all his stuff. And this is when she goes to the shipwreck and pulls out a map of ye olde Manhattan town.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, is it New Amsterdam? Like
sure.
This map that you've... As a kid, I never put two and two together. I just thought, oh, she's going about her daily mermaid business of like... reading maps and shipwrecks. Like, what else is she going to do?
Sure.
But
like,
no, she has his wallet. She's finding
her
him.
Her knowledge of the world is anything that would have been found on the bottom of the ocean.
Right. So that, like literally, I was just like, oh, that's just like her job is just like reading maps from shipwrecks. Just, you know, 9 to 5. But no, she finds this old map and that's how she tracks him down. And this is when we see Mystery Woman. Mystery nude woman on Liberty Island. And, you know, she makes it to Liberty Island and is just walking around. And as when she comes out of the water, she has legs. And when she goes back in, she gets her.
So there is an off-camera subplot, which I think it's very clever how it's revealed in this movie because they don't give you too much, that there is kind of a sea witch character that she makes some sort of a...
Well, we don't know that there's a sea witch character, but we know that there's a deal.
We know that there is a...
Somehow.
There's some sort of a bargain and a deal that she has to do everything she can in a week.
She has 6 days.
So she has 6 days to go on land and have her adventure and try to track down Alan.
Right.
I don't really think it's like Little Mermaid.
No.
That she has to like kiss him.
No,
or fall in love with him. I think that she's just like... I think the sea witch was just like, you have a week.
There's only a few things that she says. She says, I have 6 fun-filled days. She says that because she learned English from watching game shows. She has 6 fun-filled days, and then she says, until the full moon. Mm-hmm. And so we have this ticking clock, and throughout the movie, they continue to show the moon in the phases, and the moon is like getting brighter and brighter each night because we have until the full moon. And she says something about – at some point she says that – unless she goes back after the sixth day, then she can never go home. Mm-hmm. And to which he thinks, oh, okay, your visa's going to run out.
Yeah.
If you don't leave, then you're here illegally.
Because he thinks that she's just this eccentric foreign immigrant.
Yeah.
That she's from like
right.
Sweden or Norway.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But she's because all she's saying is I have 6 days, and if I don't go back in 6 days, then I can never go home. And that's all she says. She can never go home. So what, is she stuck on land as a human if she doesn't go back to the sea by the full moon?
Is she going to turn into sea foam? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And she meets Alan, and they immediately start.
They immediately bone.
Yeah, immediately. So. It's not like, oh, it's got to be true love's kiss, because that's down. That's
done. Box checked.
That's done. Yeah. So it's not like, okay, well, curse is over. So I think it was just a thing of just like, this man is the love of my life since I was a child, and I want to see him. And
the deal that she could strike with
with whoever it was.
With this witch. I like to think that it's a witch. Did they shoot any of it?
Okay, so they shot a sea hag character, but I don't think it's a deal being made. It's an older, haggard mermaid hag who is warning her of the dangers of dry land.
Okay.
I think. But Ron said that it's – they cut it for time, and then ultimately it ended up working – the mystery.
It works out in the edit that right. You really don't know
right, right.
What the backstory is.
So I think here's my thing. I think that mermaids probably do live a really long life, right? Like mm-hmm. Way longer than humans. And she meets him as a child and is just thinking about him her whole life. And then she meets him again as an adult on Cape Cod. And the witch or whoever says, okay, you got a week. Go get him. But you're done, because you can't have it both ways.
But you're from two different worlds.
So either at the end of 6 days, you love him so much that you stay with him forever, and then you become a human, and in 40 years you die, or you have your fun, and then you come back, and you live the rest of your life as a mermaid. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so then we kind of see what happens. I think that's a deal. I don't think it's a whole, like, as obviously it's not like kiss him and then you can be married and live, you know, happily ever after. But again, it's unsaid and we don't know. And she's very vague about it. And I think it does work.
I love all of the scenes with Daryl Hannah watching TV and just kind of finding out about this whole new world. I think that Daryl's really fun in all of those scenes.
So there's some really great stuff because she does come to Liberty Island naked. And when they get her at the police station, she's just wearing a like I Love New York t-shirt. So they go home, bone a bunch of times. She has Alan's wallet, so that's how the cops find Alan.
Yeah.
They call him at work. We've got this girl for you. Come get her. He comes and gets her. Takes her back to his apartment. It is heavily implied that they do it like 5 times.
Yeah, they've been boning all afternoon.
He goes back to work. And so she's watching TV and she sees this very early 80s super disco Bloomingdale's
this ad for Bloomingdale's
commercial.
Yeah.
And so she puts on Alan's clothes. So she's wearing a suit, a man's suit. And she goes downstairs and the doorman, she's all she can say is Bloomingdale's or since it's Bloomingdale's. And I love the sales lady. Sees her.
Sure.
And she says, this look, it's to die from. Love it. And she says, what did you see? Annie Hall 100 times? Mm-hmm. That look is over. I love that. I think that's so good because she's in the suit. And Daryl in the suit looks like amazing. She looked like $1 million, you know. And then they give her these like amazing 80s outfits.
Yeah.
Love them. But not dated, just kind of cool. Like,
yeah.
I love this like teal, kind of like teal.
It reminds
almost
me
greenish,
of it reminds bluish. Me of what Vicki Vale wears in Batman.
Well, yeah,
in
yeah.
Batman 89.
Yeah,
like almost that. I mean, it's not quite like a jersey
right.
material.
Yeah, it almost looks like a knitwear kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But it's got like a scarf, and she's wearing like a boot with it. Love it.
I mean, it also definitely helps that Daryl Hannah, I think, just sort of wears clothes really well.
Yeah. Daryl Hannah is 5'10".
Yeah.
I Googled.
She kind of just has like model proportions.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be 5'10", like Cindy Crawford. All the scenes when they're walking back from Bloomingdale's and she's just kind of talking and talking about, you know, the English that she learned and like figuring things out and all this stuff. When she steals the blind man's like cup of pencils and she just like brings it up into frame slowly. And he's like, where did you get that? That shit is so funny. So good. And then the thing about her name. Right.
Yeah.
Love that.
Because her name, like she's speaking it like she's underwater.
Right. So she's like, I can't say it. I can't pronounce it.
Like a dolphin sound for the name.
Yeah. Can't pronounce it in English. She's like, we'll pronounce it in your language. And she lets out this dolphin screech and it just like shatters all the TVs. So we got to think of a name for you, right? And the joke is that they're on Madison Avenue and she's like, oh, that's Madison, which we live on Madison Avenue. And she's like, Madison, that's it. I like that. And he's like, well, that's not a name. It's a street. And he says, well, it's a good thing we weren't on 125th Street. And it's just a funny little Tom Hanks, the way he says it.
Do you think that Madison became a popular name after this movie?
Absolutely, 1,000%.
I did not grow up with any Madisons.
I didn't grow up with any. We wouldn't have grown up with any because it wasn't a name until, like, I mean, maybe you might have.
I would have. I mean, I would think that there would be.
It took a couple of years.
Girls in the mid to late 80s named Madison.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's just a name now. Like, it's just a name. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was just like, oh, what a funny joke. Like, Madison. Like, you can't name, like, Broadway is not a name, you know. But now it's just not a funny joke anymore because it's just a name. And I think this movie really kind of did that for Madison as a girl's name. Love it.
I really like the styling of Alan Bauer.
Yes.
I think that Tom Hanks wears some really cool...
He really does.
...looks in this movie.
He's got his little baseball jacket.
His little baseball jacket. He has a really cool kind of... It's like a two-piece coat almost, right? He wears a really cool jacket. And like when he's playing racquetball with John Candy...
Right, right.
...the cutoff situation I think is super cute.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, he's got the short shorts because it's the 80s and that's just what men wore, but he's wearing like a Henley with the sleeves pushed up.
He has this really
and
cool
then
preppy
a
style
sweatshirt over it, but the sweatshirt is cut up like a t-shirt. It's cut into a wide boat neck, but then there's a V cutout in the front, and then it's got like cap sleeves, and then that's over a white Henley with the sleeves pushed up. And, like, it looks so cool.
You mentioned the baseball jacket.
It looks so cool.
I think that he wears a few cool jackets in this movie.
Yes, yes. But he'll wear a baseball jacket with jeans, but he'll have a dress shirt and a tie on underneath it, right?
Yeah.
Which is just, like, great. So I think at the time, it was just kind of to show that he's young. He's professional. He runs this business, but he's still like a young, kind of like happy-go-lucky kind of a guy. This kind of accessible Tom Hanks character that we love, right? And so, yeah, so his fashion is great. It's Tom Hanks in the 80s. What's not to love?
Interesting. This costume designer has worked with David Bowie. She did The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mary Routh.
Okay. But yeah, those scenes with Alan and Madison in the apartment, she is just like down to fuck nonstop.
That bathroom scene kind of still gives me major anxiety of when Madison gets in the bathtub and you see the reveal of
the tail.
The tail.
Yeah.
And then Alan wants to get in the bathroom
because
he thinks that something's wrong, and you see Madison on the floor.
Right.
How Daryl, like, hits the floor in that scene, I'm just like, oof. I hope that you, like, set up some, like, towels or something.
Yeah, because she tries to get out of the bathtub, but she's in the tail, so she just hits the ground. And, okay, the scene is shot. There's a dimmer in the bathroom. She turns the lights on, but she dims them all the way down, and there's, like, this soft light coming through, like, the window, and she runs a bath and puts salt, like from the big canister right into the water.
Oh, sure, because she's trying to get like salt water.
Yeah.
Because it won't work in fresh water.
Right. Well, it does work in fresh water because Dr. Kornbluth just hits her with a hose.
Okay.
Sure. I think she's just more comfortable.
She's more comfortable in, yeah, in salt water.
But yeah, she pours. She has the, what is the little girl with the umbrella? And she pours it into the bathtub, and she gets in there, and there's an amazing practical effect where
the
her
cool
legs,
reveal of that, yeah, flipper
just turns into scales. Just,
oh my god,
on her body.
That shot.
Yeah. It's a practical effect. It's all in camera. It's vacuum form. And like,
it's like when you're watching, yeah, that scene, you're like, whoa,
how the hell did they do that? As a kid, I'm just like, what in the hell? Yeah, so cool, but it is a very anxiety-inducing scene.
There's just something about how Daryl is so distressed of that she's trying to, like, dry herself off.
Right.
He can't to get her legs back. Ugh.
Yeah. He can't see her. Yeah. And then she's just – he's just like, what was going on? She's just like, oh, well, you know, I was in the bathtub, and I didn't want you to see me. I'm shy. And he's just like, what? Like, we just, like, kind of did it a whole bunch of times all over the apartment, and now you're shy. And I like the way she just says, like, I'm shy. She walks out of the bathroom. Yeah. I love it. But, yeah, it's just something about her performance and her voice and the distress in her voice. You're just like, ah.
I do find something about the screenplay that I think maybe it lacks a little bit in the third act of the story. Of that, once you kind of have Madison kidnapped by these authorities and, like, uh-huh, the Natural History Museum, I find that part of the screenplay to be, I don't know, I guess it's not as fun.
Right.
This
is
kind of when it kind of takes a very different direction.
Right.
In the story.
I think we really attach ourselves to kind of their getting to know each other.
Their relationship, yeah, Madison, yeah, finding out what it's like to live in New York City.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, we know that Tom Hanks has this kind of aversion to these, like, long-term relationships, and he can't bring himself to tell a woman that he loves her and all that. And so he's kind of, like, struggling with, do I want to pursue this? I know that, you know, she's really beautiful and we get along really well, but, you know, he just has something in the back of his mind about it. And yeah, there's just there's, like, the moment at the ice skating rink where she kind of runs away because he's, like, kind of gets a little short with her. So they definitely have, like, some ups and downs with the two of them and like, kind of their intentions, I guess. But she buys him that fountain.
Oh, the fountain. So you mentioned that this fountain was at MGM Studios?
Yes, in Orlando.
In Orlando, okay.
Yeah, they're walking in the park, and they see a fountain with the mermaid on the top. And he's just like, oh, I love this fountain. I've always loved this fountain since I was a kid. And she's like, oh.
Did she just charge it to the Vista?
No.
To the Vista card?
So what happens is he says they're going to tear this park down. And she's like, why? And he's like, oh, they're going to put oceanfront condos, because it's right on the river, I guess. Riverfront condos, he says.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, that's so sad. And he's like, yeah, it's so sad. So when he goes to the house and the fountain is, like, in the living room, he's like, what the hell? How'd you do this? She says she traded her necklace for it.
Oh, sure.
So I guess the whole thing was, like, they're going to tear it down anyway.
And the necklace was valuable.
And the necklace looked valuable, yeah. It was valuable.
It's like undersea treasure.
Yes. Yeah, and it had the Versace Medusa on it. So, yeah, so I guess whoever was going to tear it down was just like, okay, like, I'll bring this to your house if, you know. How they got it through the front door, who knows? Mm-hmm. It's neither here nor there.
I wanted to mention really quickly about Babalu Mandel.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this guy's filmography of just one of the screenwriters of this movie wrote A League of Their Own and Parenthood.
Work.
Multiplicity. Father's Day, Forget Paris, Where the Heart Is, EdTV. I mean, the screenwriter is the king of, like, you're at home on a Saturday afternoon, and one of these movies will be on basic cable.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Those are some big movies. Icons.
It's kind of this, like, screenwriter for hire.
Yeah, yeah.
That just wrote these massive comedies. He wrote Greedy, Seedy Slickers, both movies.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Wow, okay. All right. Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
And then Oscar nominated for Splash.
Oh, interesting.
It's a very like 80s screenwriting choice to put Splash in the original screenplay lineup.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. So Dr. Kornbluth, when Madison and Alan first kind of re-meet when he goes to Cape Cod at the beginning of the movie, Dr. Kornbluth is down in the water. Don't know what he's looking for.
Isn't he looking for her?
He doesn't know she's there initially. He first sees her after, you know,
some like oceanography. He's like, yeah, looking for something. Is he mapping this part of the ocean? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But he sees her, and then he just kind of becomes obsessed with like tracking her down. And that's kind of his little like B story through line throughout the rest of the movie. He kind of thinks, okay, I saw a mermaid. I know she's there. And he kind of puts two and two together.
He wants to get all of his money from the National Enquirer.
Okay.
For probably proof of people that live under the sea.
Sure. So his grand plan is to just find her in Manhattan and dump water on her, mm-hmm, and turn her into a mermaid and expose her. And so he keeps finding women that look like her. And it's the same woman. And this man beats the shit out of him and breaks his arms because he keeps spraying this woman with the hose. But we kind of see this throughout the movie of Dr. Kornbluth kind of tracking them down and just kind of the hijinks that ensue with that. I remember specifically being in the movie theater and the scene when, for some reason, they go to a dinner where the president is there.
The president of the United States.
The president of the United States.
And they're at the Biltmore.
The president of what? The Three Stooges fan club. Yeah, they're at the Biltmore in L.A. But
second movie that Tom Hanks made in 1984.
At the Biltmore.
Where there is a major kind of major accident at the Biltmore.
Right. Oh, but it's not actually there. I'm thinking of the scene where they eat the lobster.
Oh, sure.
But I remember specifically the crowd losing their minds at when her biting into that lobster tail.
I mean, it's kind of, I mean, we wouldn't have, maybe we wouldn't have the scene from Pretty Woman if it weren't for Madison eating that lobster.
Yeah. Daryl Hannah, lifelong vegetarian.
Maybe they gave her some, like, prop lobster.
She said it is mashed potatoes and leeks.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That they put into a lobster shell. Well, but it was real lobster tails, but they took the meat out because she would eat it. But she bit through the shells, though.
Mm-hmm.
Gross. But yeah, I specifically remember people really laughing at that scene. I feel like my dad laughed really loud at that. And I didn't get it. I was just like, what? I don't know. I'm five. What? I don't know how you eat lobster. But yeah, all of those kinds of scenes of her just like kind of learning about like life on land, life on dry land, just so charming. She's mm-hmm. just so good at it.
Yeah.
And he's just like the way he plays along and talks to the other people in the room and does like audience work with everybody like watching her, I think is just really, really charming on both of their behalfs.
Yeah. Do we want to kind of talk a little bit about the last section of the movie when Madison is found by Kornbluth,
Dr. Kornbeef.
He pulls the hose on her, and you get that great shot of her out front on the sidewalk mm-hmm. when they're walking. They're walking out of the Biltmore, right?
Right, right.
That, I mean, she turns into the mermaid, and right. all of a sudden people know about Meredith, and all of a sudden people know about Madison.
Sure. So I guess the idea of having the president there is so that the Secret Service are there, and so there's like government officials around mm-hmm. to just like whisk her away. Maybe they just needed like, because otherwise he sprays her with a hose and she turns into a mermaid and everybody's like, ah.
But then what do you do with her then?
Like call the police? Like why? But because the president's there, Dr. Kornbluth like infiltrates the cater waiters and they see him with the hose in his jacket, and they think it's a gun.
Yeah.
So they're like, take him down. And as they're taking him down, he sees Madison, and he shoots her with the hose. And, yeah, she turns into a mermaid. And, like, the dress and then the tails under the dress, and it's this big wide shot, and it's Kermit riding the bike, and it's, like, her on the sidewalk. And, like, how is she sitting there?
These scenes,
and then it turns into what you're saying.
These scenes of Madison under observation, those always used to bum me out when I was a kid.
Absolutely, it's supposed to.
I don't like to see sad Daryl Hannah in the tank.
Well, her tail gets all gross, mm-hmm. and like even Dr. Kornbluth is like, she looks a little pale. Like,
yeah.
What's going on? And the doctor's like, oh, we're going to dissect her, and you know, we have to see about like her reproductive system and all that. But those scenes early on, because they get Alan too. And they throw him in the tank, and they're trying to see if he's a merman. And it's Tom Hanks standing there holding onto his junk under the water. And I'm just like,
ooh, boy.
I like men now.
Yep.
mm-hmm. You know? It's a little kid. Yeah. A rainbow flag t-shirt at Target's not going to do the trick, but maybe this movie will.
Tom Hanks in this, like, water tank.
Yeah.
Covering up his junk definitely will.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, these sections of the movie, I think that still to this day, I maybe get a little impatient with.
Right.
Of once the government is involved and.
It kind of takes a turn with the tone.
Madison's like under observation, but I get why it's there story wise.
Right.
So it makes me even happier when this ragtag crew of.
Sure.
Alan, Freddy the brother, and then they later kind of recruit Walter, the Eugene Levy character, to break her out.
Yeah. Because Walter Kornbluth, when he sees that they're going to dissect her and she's just sitting there in the tank looking all sad and her tail's getting all gross and, like, you know, she's just in a tank with barely enough room to, like, turn around, he's just like, oh, this is not why I found her. Like, this is not why I was looking for her, you know? So he kind of decides, all right, we're gonna bust her out. So they bust her out, hijinks ensue, you know. It's very like
they make their way to the it's the Hudson, right?
Yeah, the East, I don't know the rivers in New York.
Yeah,
the Hudson River, yeah.
They make their way to the
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of whatever bay that is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not a New Yorker. The Hudson, yeah, sure.
Sure.
I mean, we get the big scene of...
There's a difference between the Hudson and the East River.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
We get the big scene between Alan and Madison saying goodbye.
Yeah. You know, and she's just... She tells him, like, you know, if you come with me, like, if you're with me, you're safe under the water. Like, when you were a kid, you were safe, right?
Yeah.
Because we were together.
Here's
and he's like, oh, yeah. And he goes, okay, great. I'll go with you. Like, let's get the hell out of here. And then, like, we'll come back and see Freddy at Christmas. And she's like, no. If you come with me, that's it. Like, either we go back or I stay. Mm-hmm. And I can't stay because they're going to dissect
me. I mean, it's kind of a fun element to the script. I mean, mermaids are involved with the story.
Right.
So, I mean... You can go there with magical realism and have Alan just join her underwater. Yeah.
She kisses him and then he can breathe.
And then he's he just becomes a merman.
Yeah.
Does
he become a merman?
He ends up diving in the water with her and they swim off.
Right. Well, the frogmen jump in and you're like, oh shit, here come the frogmen. And then she like boom, scissor kicks with the tail and like knocks one out, and then they start pulling masks off of all the guys, and then they swim away so fast. It's cool. It's very like, oh shit.
So
like,
do you think that Alan is getting an honorary tail?
Right. So
do you think that
these are the questions?
Maybe like the sea witch involved.
Does Alan want a tail?
I mean, he's gonna have to have a tail.
Right.
He can't be doing this with both legs. They're going to have to figure out some tail situation for Alan. I think that he's going to somehow get a magical fish tail.
Well, then it turns into that whole thing of just like, well, now their bottom halves are fish. And so where's the fun in that? She's just going to like lay her eggs all over the place and he's just going to like do his stuff all over the eggs. There's no fun in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about that. I mean, it's probably questions that, like...
There's a Futurama joke about Fry meeting a mermaid, and she explains to him the physics of the two of them having sex, and he's just like, nope. Nope.
How is the Doug Jones character in The Shape of Water? He has 2 feet, or like he has two legs.
He has legs,
right?
Yeah.
He has 2 legs, but
and
just...
she kind of explains to Octavia that he's got a hidden dick.
Okay.
She does a thing with her, you know, because she doesn't talk.
Yeah.
So, and Octavia's like, well, what do you do? Like, how do you do it? And what's her name?
Sally Hawkins.
Sally Hawkins does this thing with her hands, and then she like makes this like little like dick like thing with her fingers. So she kind of says like he's got a dick. It's just in there. You don't see it. But that's the rub with the whole mermaid situation.
Sure.
Is that, oh, they're beautiful, but really, what are you going to do with that? Do you want a reverse mermaid where the top half is a fish?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
bottom
know
bottom half
that.
Is lady? We don't know about that either.
I like to think that Alan is going to get hooked up with a tail somehow.
Sure. Okay. So think back to the first time you saw this movie, and you're like, okay, he's going with her. Yes, he's going, and they're going to go live under the sea, and they swim away into the deep depths of the dark ocean, and the camera pans to the left, and you see Atlantica, and then the credits roll.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, fucking burn. I was like, yeah. Really? We see the credits roll.
We don't
roll
even get it. It wasn't right, in the budget.
Yeah.
It wasn't in the budget.
Atlantica's just like off in the distance, and you're just like, ah, oh, that's all. As a kid, it was just like, I want to see her like her mermaid city.
Mm-hmm.
Other mermaids. Nope, you don't get it. But it's like, you know, it's indicated that this,
yeah.
That this, you know,
I mean, it's ocean a wonderland. It's a modern day fairy tale that, yeah, I kind of like. I like that it has this crazy, almost magical realism ending.
Well, the rest of the movie had so much mystery to it,
yeah.
That they left it up to us as the watchers to fill in the blanks.
I mean, partly because I just don't think that stuff like that was really in the budget.
No,
for the first,
not at all.
For the
absolutely
first movie
not.
With Touchstone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of anything
no,
off the page
no,
in
was,
your imagination.
There's no way that that's ever going to get done. And the fact that they even showed us this image of like the Sea Kingdom, I think was probably... They might have gone back and forth. It was like, we're not going to show that. Like, that might have even been too much.
Or maybe it was something that they saved until the very end of production when they were given the okay.
Right.
From the people writing the checks of, okay, you can go and get those scenes.
And it's very vague, too. It's like so yeah. far away. It's like and just it, the vague.
Yeah, and it's happening
of,
as like yeah. the credits are rolling.
Right.
Too.
Right. So it's like, could it be? Yeah, that's the underwater city. It's Atlantica.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as a kid, you want everything. So as a kid, you're just like, oh, man, what the hell? You're telling me we don't get to see this, like, this underwater wonderland that she lives in? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great ending.
Yeah, I mean, this movie definitely was a good start to Ron Howard's directing career. I mean, yes. I think that he had done limited film work prior to Splash.
Is he Used Cars? Is that him or is that
no, Used Cars is Zemeckis. Here, let me look up what Ron Howard had done prior to Splash.
Ronnie
Howard. I mean, I think that he had done episodes of Happy Days, of course, that you're going to direct on the sitcom that you're starring in.
Sure.
But here, let me check.
All right.
He had done some shorts before. He had done a TV movie. I mean, yeah, this was his first major feature that he had just done television work and shorts prior to this.
Okay.
I mean, he's been directing shorts since, like, the 60s.
Huh.
So it's like, Ronnie is...
Well, then those are just movies that he's yeah, making in the backyard.
Exactly.
Like,
but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cousins. Do those count?
But I mean, he followed this up with Cocoon, which Cocoon also was a pretty big hit, right?
I believe so.
Cocoon is one of those weird movies that is MIA on streaming.
Sure.
That you cannot find yeah. it anywhere.
You know, you see a lot of Cocoon 2.
Sure.
But you never see, like...
But yeah, I mean, followed it up with Willow and Parenthood in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that Willow was really that big of a hit. We love Willow. We're huge Willow fans.
Okay, Night Shift. Night Shift is a feature that he did with Henry Winkler and Michael Keaton.
Okay, that's what you were thinking of, right?
Well, I mean, that's his first movie. It's from 82.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that also...
That's his first feature-length... The theatrical
that
release.
Also stars Shelley Long, so I would imagine that her name would be on the list
in
to play
list.
Madison
yeah.
somewhere.
Yeah, 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 that was that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, and that movie was a flop. Mm-hmm. That movie was not not well liked.
But yeah, we love Splash.
I mean, what's not to love? What's not to love? It, yeah, everybody involved is just—it's just like the circumstances surrounding it to bring all these people together.
It has cute,
everybody passing on
cute
it.
80s and, Tom Hanks yeah. and beautiful Daryl Hannah as this mermaid.
Yeah, and just like looks aside, they just play these roles so well.
It's a good example of an 80s movie made for an for adults, but kids can latch onto it.
Absolutely.
And a lot of kind of, it's like the sex stuff, the letters to Penthouse.
Yeah.
Lines just
all that
go,
stuff goes over your
it
head.
It goes right over kids' heads. Yeah. That when you're watching it now, you're just like, oh my god, all right, John Candy.
Lesbian no more. Yeah, and the yeah, and throwing the coins down to look up these ladies' skirts, all that stuff. We forgot to mention at the produce place where they work, Tom Hanks's assistant is Mrs. Stimler, and she's played by Dodie Goodman, who you may remember from Grease and the Chipmunk movie.
That's right. She is in the Chipmunk movie. Yeah.
She's so funny in this movie. She got her character got struck by lightning, so she's a little off. And if Dodie Goodman knows how to play anything, she knows how to play a
that
cuckoo.
Is a, and also that is a character that. It's like she walked right off of Happy Days, too. She voices Rebecca Miller.
Miss Miller.
Miss Miller in the Chipmunk Adventure, We Stand. Mm-hmm.
She's in a couple of Chipmunk movies. She's in Alvin and Chipmunks Meet the Wolfman mm-hmm. as Miss Miller. But yeah, she's a really funny, like, just like bit part in this. But everybody's just so well cast. And yeah, I mean... I don't know that Ron Howard has a distinct directing style.
No, he's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. And so this movie is like, maybe that really worked for this movie's favor, that he just sure. kind of let the material and let the actors. I think Tom Hanks probably brought a lot to this character that may not have been on the page or as written, just his manic kind
oh,
of
yeah. I mean, that's,
delivery.
That's probably just the actor in Ron Howard that yeah. he really just kind of... follows the steps of the actors
right.
and kind of lets them lead. I mean, and, you see yeah. that all over his career, especially something like The Grinch.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And I think he's definitely mentioned it with Daryl and just them being so lucky with her being able to work so well underwater that they were able to get a lot more of her than they initially planned because, you know, she worked out so well, you know, doing all the underwater scenes. So, yeah, I think he really took... a lot of input from the actors and John Candy being so funny and probably making his character be a lot more dynamic than maybe it originally was. But yeah, maybe that's the directing style that he brings to this and why it's just so endearing. But you're right. There's that level of 80s movie that like maybe we didn't have a lot of business watching these movies as kids, but we watched the hell out of them.
Yeah.
And this is right up there with, you know, we just did Poltergeist. You know, mm-hmm. I think this is just something that, like, we just watched it.
And you mentioned of just going to this movie with your dad.
Yeah.
And just that time with going to movies in the 80s that you're just going to bring your small kids mm-hmm. when you're going to a movie.
Yeah. But it's not like The Exorcist, you know?
No, not at all.
It's a mermaid movie. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. In the 80s, it's like, oh, it's a mermaid movie. Kids, right? You see Mogwai and you're like, all right, kids. This is 1983, so oh, it's 84. Actually, yeah, so it's...
Just
so
turned
it's,
40.
So it's PG.
Yeah.
Right? Had PG-13 even come out?
No, not yet.
Yeah, so maybe this would have been PG-13 later on. But still, if my dad brought us, then hey.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's. I think it's just for people of a certain age. Like you said, it's on Disney Channel all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably on the Superstation all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the USA Network.
I need to track down this Laserdisc.
Yeah.
I want to find a copy of this Laserdisc.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
not in the collection that I inherited from my grandparents. Because right. I got most of, mm-hmm. I got most of all of those, but Splash was not in it.
Right, right.
I also just find mermaid culture just in general to be
fascinating. We haven't even talked about professional mermaids.
Professional mermaids, which I fucking love.
Yeah.
I love all of that bullshit. I think it is fascinating.
I immediately was like, girl, we have to watch. What is it called on Netflix? Merpeople.
Merpeople.
Merpeople on Netflix. Listeners.
So you had watched Merpeople before me. You had watched all of it.
I think I was sick, and so I just watched
it. And then when we were in Hawaii at my parents' condo, what a great time to just watch Merpeople on Netflix. Is it called Merpeople?
It's called Merpeople. Yeah,
just Merpeople. That just looks at all of these people. I mean, it's primarily set around Florida.
Right.
Around Wenatchee in Florida, which
Wiki Watchy.
Yeah. Which is kind of, it was this famous tourist attraction that had a mermaid tank and you would go and watch shows.
Yes. It's it was like a natural spring or a hot spring or something, and it was like this deep pool, and they had like this whole like amphitheater with a, you know, that you could see under the water into the spring, and it had live mermaids.
And okay, so that reminds me of being a kid and sometimes being brought to the Sip and Dip in Great Falls, Montana. Mm-hmm. That the Sip and Dip was a tiki lounge and it was in like a motor lodge motel.
Right.
That it was a hotel bar, and it was built right next to the pool, which was indoors. And the pool had a big glass wall on the side, and the bar looked into it. And they would have mermaids on weekends.
Yeah.
And there's a story that when they were making a small independent film called North Country starring Daryl Hannah, the cast went there for drinks, and Daryl put on one of the fins and got in.
Oh, I love it.
And she signed the wall.
Oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
My mom tells me about Disneyland and the submarine adventure. Your mom talked. Doesn't she remember the mermaids?
I think so.
I think she's talked about it. Then in the 60s and the 70s, there were mermaids. They were just face characters that you would just be a mermaid in the lagoon dodging the damn Nautilus as it like drove towards you. They would sit on the rocks and comb their hair, and they would jump into the water, and you could see them. There were live mermaids in the submarine ride at Disneyland. The Merpeople documentary, it's about professional mermaids, and if you're not familiar with what a professional mermaid is, watch Merpeople.
Who's the main mermaid that
Sparkles?
Sparkle. Oh my god.
Sparkles.
Sparkles.
Love Mermaid Sparkles. She's amazing. But it really talks about you know, the fact that they do these kids' parties, you know, events where they go and put on the tail and make a living. And it's so interesting.
Well, it's also really interesting when they talk about what makes a great show mermaid of what you're going to be performing for people that are going to be watching, that there has to be like a movement to your body.
Yeah.
That, I mean, if I were to just put on a mermaid fin and just like flop around, it's not going to look as cool.
Right.
And they call that being a dead mermaid. Of that, when you're just, there's a movement to your body and how you handle the fin that like you're graceful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like there's like an art to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like very strenuous of how you do it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I remember they called it being a dead mermaid.
Right. And they talk a lot about the Mer-Taylor.
Yeah, the Mer-Taylor.
The Mer-Taylor, and his story is amazing. He would go to that the Wiki-Watchy.
The Wiki-Watchy like performances and make friends with all of those ladies.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was just like, hey, how about you let me
I mean, surprise, surprise. Little gay kid, that he was just kind of this eccentric kid that had this passion for being a mermaid. And then he like made a whole business of it as an adult, and he makes fins. Like pretty much when you go and buy a mermaid fin, you're probably going to be going. You're probably going to be going for the Mer-Taylor.
Yeah. If you today go online and want to get a really nice high quality mermaid fin, it's probably going to be a Mer-Taylor fin. And these things are not cheap.
No.
So these people like Sparkles, you know, they buy these fins and they spend thousands of dollars, hundreds and thousands of dollars on these fins. And they go out and it's a gig economy. You know, they're doing birthday parties where what are they going to make? $200,
mm-hmm.
right? They do Renaissance fairs, weird things like that, and just like, okay, make a little bit of money here and there. But they put so much of it into it. The cruise that they all went on with, like, the pageant and all that. Oh, my God. So good.
There's also a big social media. There's on gay Instagram, surprise, yes. surprise, there is a lot of gay mermaids. A few that I follow after watching Mermen. a few that I follow of mermaid. There's Mermaid Andy, Mermaid Jax, the Mer Taylor, and Merman Rand. Is Merman Rand the one that has the orca fin?
Yes.
I like him.
Yes.
And they do, like, sexy stuff underwater,
Merman too. Rand, yes. He's got a spicy Twitter.
Yep.
That
they're in, like, jock straps underneath.
His Instagram will link
under
you
the
to
water.
It. Yeah. Yep. He has a couple of tales, but one of his most prominent tales is orca kind of esque. Which is interesting because the special effects artist who created Daryl's tale initially brought to them a more cetacean, which is like a more mammal, kind of like a dolphin whale kind of a tale. And it's like biologically, if it's a mer person, this is what it would look like.
Sure.
Mammals, whales, and dolphins, they swim like mermaids up and down, right? Fish, when they wag their tails, think of a shark side to side.
Side to side.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he was like, well, if it's going to go up and down, it's going to be like a mammal tail. So he brought him like a dolphin tail. And Ron was like, it's gray.
I don't want that.
It's gray. I don't want
that. That's not going to photograph.
Smooth. It doesn't look like a fish. It has to look like a fish. So he went back and he made this koi goldfish mm-hmm. look. And it just looks so beautiful. It's just like,
yeah.
It looks like an anatomical fish. So it shouldn't look beautiful. Well, yeah, but... yeah, so there's the whole other thing. The mermaid, the body found.
I remember
which we've
us,
talked about.
I remember us. I think that we talked about it on Keep It Weird.
Yes.
So, like, the mermaid, the body found, which we were just scrolling through our.
Was it the Learning Channel
cable yeah. one day? I think it was on. I don't. I wouldn't.
It wouldn't be on TLC.
I don't think it would be on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But anyways, it was a documentary.
It was a mockumentary.
It was a mockumentary that tried to pass itself off like a documentary.
Yeah.
But it was clever because as you're watching it and you just turn it on, you're just like, is this shit for real?
Because there were actors. Because
there's actors. I mean, they're playing this whole mockumentary strength too.
Yes.
Which I love.
Yeah.
And but that mermaid was disgusting looking.
Scary.
Too.
Very.
I mean, probably what a mermaid would look like.
Well, they
if
went
it was
down,
crawling out of
they
the ocean.
They went down the path of evolution. And if it's a person from the waist up, then what happened to their legs? What happened to, you know, you look at cetacean dolphins and whales, you look at their skeletons and they have like little feet bones just like floating there.
Yeah.
Like not in like a fin or anything. They're just like vestigial little bones from like when they had legs. So like evolutionary, like they turned into these whales and they turned into dolphins. So if that happened there, then maybe it would have happened with like a primate offshoot, right? So they went down that path, which was, again, how you get that whale tail kind of a thing. Fascinating. It gets a little spooky. And then that's when we get into the TikTok territory of are sirens and mermaids real?
The dark sides of TikTok. I mean, the ocean is a big place.
Large,
we don't
dark
know what's down there.
Place.
I mean, do they speculate that what sailors hundreds of years ago thought mermaids were they just dolphins?
Beluga whales, manatees.
Manatees, yeah. Sure.
Because manatees have the most mermaid-looking tail.
Sure.
But the top half of manatees look like big hippos.
Well, especially probably Spanish ships that were sailing around Florida
into the Caribbean.
At the time in the Caribbean would see manatees and just think that they're this this mysterious creature.
Yeah.
This human underneath the water.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. Dolphins can travel really fast, so maybe all you see is the tail. But yeah, I don't know. It's a very interesting like lore.
The siren sound, probably like whales and dolphins.
Right, yeah. And that's the thing. If you're out there on the ocean, can you hear whale song from above the water?
I bet you can.
Oh,
spooky.
That's crazy. Like, I would, yeah, that's nuts. And if that's what they're hearing, it's like, what the hell is that? That does sound really crazy. I think it's, is it in the Odyssey? Or is it in the Iliad when they find the island with the sirens?
Oh, I can't remember.
And I don't even think they...
I think it might be the Iliad.
I think the sirens in that, I don't even think they're like mermaids with tails. I just think they're ladies on an island.
Sure.
Like, I think the sirens in Homer are just ladies.
Mm-hmm.
They're just women. I don't think that they have like mermaid tails. I think they're on the island with Circe, I think. And Circe is like calling them, and then they turn them into pigs and all of that. Or is that The Simpsons? I think it's the Iliad. But yeah, that's a whole other thing. And then for years and years, and there's some versions of it where sirens have like bird bodies, but then that's more like harpy. So it's kind of all over. So Look, open up your Wikipedia on your phone, just kind of see what the difference between the sirens
and
the
mermaid.
Fun
to do a deep dive on stuff like that. I mean, yeah. I mentioned earlier in the episode that when I would be out on boats as a kid, that I always just used to think, mm-hmm. like, I don't really know
what is... Oh, I would look for mermaids,
I don't really know what is, like, underneath us in this boat.
Yeah.
Could it be a mermaid?
Yeah.
I remember when we were out once, and a whale just, like, was very close to our boat and came up and flapped his tail.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, holy shit.
That's amazing.
Yep.
I love it. Yeah. You know, my tattoo is from, like I said, it's from the Loteria card. And so it says La Sirena on it because the Spanish word for mermaid is sirena. So it's just siren, right? I remember somebody, a coworker, reading when I got the tattoo, was new. She looked at it and she goes, Serena, who's she? I was like, it's not Serena.
Who's she, though?
It's Sirena. Yeah, so I guess the legends and all that kind of get mixed up over the thousands of years.
You know, it was our tattoo artist. Mm-hmm. It was Andrew's idea to attach Bert the Merman to a sailor.
Okay.
Like, he kind of came up with it. It was like, hey, you should just have him dragging down a sailor.
Yeah.
And we'll do a little sailor pinup.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really it's a fun idea. Looks huge. It's big.
My tattoo is giant.
Mine is
I love that when I'm
card.
Working checkout at TJ's, that there's certain old people that look at the sailor tied up and they're just like, what
yeah.
the hell do you have on your arm?
Like, don't worry about it.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think our fascination with mermaids and like the, you know, it's just fun.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Magic.
So the mermaid Barbies nowadays.
I don't like the mermaid Barbies with plastic tails.
The tail, that's one big piece. Yeah.
I got our Ocean King Ken, which is like
Girl.
The Cadillac
Girl.
Of mermaid Barbies.
Ocean King Ken, we got it. We're moving, so we'll take a picture of him before we pack
Ocean
him up.
Ocean King Ken is gay rights.
Did we pack up Mermaid Ken yet? No, he's
just in the box.
He's still in the box.
But
he's not in a box.
No, he's out. Yeah, he's okay. just out okay. in his little box.
Okay. So we'll get a picture of him before we pack him away for the move. But listen, he's wearing a harness. He's got like Fabio hair.
That was an artist submitted design mm-hmm. for Barbie too. Mm-hmm. Like that was submitted with like a contest to get a doll made. I remember the day that dropped on the internet to buy, I had numerous people, including your sister, text me it.
Yeah. And he has, his tail goes over, so the doll has legs, the tail goes over the legs, which is what we like. His tail's like a rose gold kind of color. Yeah. Great, great doll, great investment. We love our Under the Sea Ken. We're not going to take him out of the box. He's too good. But yeah, there's some mermaid Barbies now that are on the more inexpensive side. They're made for playing. They're made for kids to play with.
I told you about the Ariel doll that I had as a kid that I got for Christmas.
Yes.
My mom got me the Ariel doll, and I loved it.
Did her tail...
The tail was fabric.
And it went over her legs.
It went over her legs.
So you could take it off and she had legs and then put it on and she's got the tail. Love it. I like that. Yeah. Was it just Ariel or did you come with Eric?
I just had Ariel.
Well, that's good, though. Mm-hmm. That's all you need. How did her red hair look under the water?
Beautiful.
I love it.
I mean, It's one of those things, too. I mean, we did a whole episode on The Little Mermaid with our friend Allison that I think that we take for granted Ariel's fire engine red hair.
It's like an apple.
And
red.
Just how crazy that is. That I would imagine that when they were animating it, that Jeffrey Katzenberg was just saying, like, all mermaids clearly are blondes. But the animators were like, if you put this blonde mermaid in the bottom of the ocean, like, the hair's not going to look good.
Right.
So they wisely made it, like, a primary color.
Right.
So it would, like, animate nicely.
And they didn't go with the Finding Nemo kind of tropical under the water. They went a very dark underwater in Little Mermaid. It's like, it's a very kind of realistic, kind of really deep, dark blues and inky kind of colors under there.
Yeah.
So, like, the contrast.
It's kind of like dirty ocean water almost. Right.
So, the red really contrasts that. And then with the green tail and all that, it just works. It works so well. Mm-hmm. And Madison's blonde hair works really well with her goldfish orange tail, you know?
Yeah.
There's a reason that these, you know, artists are in place to make these decisions, not us, but they made all the right ones. But yeah.
Any last reflections?
Final thoughts on Splash? Well, if you watch Splash on Disney Plus, as of this recording, they have taken away the artificial doormat hair on her butt.
I think that for that first shot of the butt, I think that there's a little bit on it.
A little bit of kind of zhuzhing up,
yeah.
But when she's on Liberty Island, you get full fanny.
And we talked about,
well, not fanny,
how I think that they cut the line of a lesbian no more on Disney Plus.
Like, it does feel like they cut it. But a lot of people are saying, since it's the 4K release, that it's the original.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know. We'll have to do some
that's
research.
Right. That
on
was
that.
A 4K stream. Yeah, I'm looking at the box office top 10 of March 9th, 1984, mm-hmm. which was just last week. This opened the same day as Children of the Corn. How do you like
Wow. I feel like Children of the Corn's way older.
Splash opened at number one, followed closely by Footloose, the movie that Ron Howard turned down to direct.
Okay, all right.
You know who I could have seen working as Madison, speaking of Footloose?
Not SJP.
SJP. I think SJP could have worked.
She could have done it. Yeah. Would she have had the strength underwater as Daryl?
Probably not,
but looks-wise, she could have made it work. And the character, yeah, I see it. I can see that. I thought you were going to say Helen Slater, is that her? No, it's not Helen Slater. Lori Petty?
Oh, I can't remember.
I can't remember
who's
her name.
Who's in Footloose?
It's the other Lori. Lori Singer, yeah.
I eventually want to get to another movie starring Daryl Hannah that just had a big anniversary this year. I would love to talk about
Kill Bill.
How cunty she is in the Kill Bill movies as Elle Driver. She's so good. Should have been Oscar nominated for Kill Bill Volume 2.
Yeah.
She's fucking rocks in that movie.
Yeah, she's really good in part 2. She's really good in part 1.
Yep.
Brief scene in part 1, but she's so good in both. She had that character down. And kind of, what a comeback.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like, oh, this is a good, like, kind of a comeback mm-hmm. piece for her. Looked great. Yeah.
And up.
Love it.
Up, there she went.
Yeah.
After.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But go watch Splash on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this was a lot of fun.
This was a lot of fun.
I love talking about Splash. I could talk about mermaids. We could do a whole episode on mer people.
Mer people that made us gay.
We can watch mer people on the Patreon.
Sure.
And do a recap. Do a deep dive on the Mer Taylor. But maybe. If the patrons just kind of beg for it, maybe we'll do that. But until then, I think it's probably about that time.
For Patreon shout-outs?
Time for some Patreon shout-outs!
Let's hear them.
All right, we'd like to say a great big thank you and hello to all of our wonderful patrons, including our friends Courtney, Christina, our friends over at the How Do You Drew podcast, Andy, Kate, Pep, Tammy, Roberto, Brett, Daisy, Kelly, Chrissy, Steven, Desiree, Laura, Thomas, Lori, Brenna, Jessa Rabbit, Lawrence, Lisa, Alexis, Thomas, Millie, Ted, Benny, Jermel, Melanie, Nicole, Susan, JJ, Shelby, Paul, Jamie, Drew, Genevieve, Dawn, Joshua, Aaron, Nick, Christine, and Rufino. You guys, thank you so much for being patrons.
Thank you so much. You will get indeed. A lot of fun stuff on our Patreon, our television that makes that made us gay is on the $5 level. I've been meaning to update this on the main Patreon page to kind of be more clear.
Our bonus episodes.
What is on all of the levels, but for the $5 level, that will give you all of the television that made us gay episodes that we are doing once a month.
Absolutely. What was our latest TV that made us gay episode? We haven't done one in a couple of weeks. We got to do our March one.
We just did The Simpsons.
Yes, we did.
We did a fun March.
Did a March.
March episode of The Simpsons.
Yes, indeed.
So you will get those at the $5 level. And then at the $10 level, the Watch With Us commentaries, where we're kind of commemorating all of the movies that just turned 25.
Yes, indeed, from 1999.
From 1999. We might dip into some 94 movies later in the year.
That turned 30.
But that will be at the $10 level. So at the $10 level, you'll get both episodes every month. You'll get the television episode and commentary. The commentary episodes. So we're doing a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah, and right now there's over 40 Watch With Us commentary episodes. There are a bunch of TV that made us gay that are coming out, new ones every month. And also at the $5 level, we did a whole season of RuPaul's Drag Race. We did All Stars 8, I believe. We did the entire season of that. We recapped those. Those are in there at $5, just kind of in the back catalog. So take a look. Check it out. Sign up. If you can only afford to make a donation for 1 month, hey, do that. And the entire month, you'll get access to everything at that level. It's really fun. And all of your donations go directly to keeping the show on the air once a week for free with no commercials for you. So thank you so much for allowing us to do this show every week.
You know what is free, Pete?
Yes.
Is to write us a review.
Yes, indeed.
On iTunes or Spotify.
Please
we would love
do.
That.
Yes. Also, if you have Apple Podcasts or Spotify, give us 5 stars. That's the easiest thing to do. Just search our podcast, hit the 5 stars. All that stuff helps for the show. We've consistently been in the top 50 in Apple Podcasts for the past couple of weeks. Thank you so much for that. And follow our socials. We're most active on Instagram. We're at Movies That Made Us Gay.
Yeah.
Follow us over there. We're really funny.
Yeah.
We make lots of memes.
You can follow our personal accounts. I'm Scott Youngbauer on Instagram, and follow my letterbox, just Scott Youngbauer.
Yes, indeed. And I am at Peter Lasagna on Instagram and X, formerly known as Twitter. But I think both of us are just most active on Instagram, and Scott's letterboxed. You can follow all the movies that we see. We're at the movie theater a lot, so check it out. But thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.